Tuesday, March 16, 2016. May we have a roll call, please?
Director Lucy?
Here.
Director Hill?
Here.
Chairman Schultz?
Here. Thank you, John. Would you all please rise with us for the flag this evening? Hand over your heart. Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay. All right. Let's move on to our public comments tonight. Is there anyone that would like to address the board on any item that is not on the agenda? Okay. Seeing no one come forward. We're going to move into our consent agenda this evening. And there are three items on consent. One is item 4A, review and approval of minutes of the meeting of March 2nd, 2016. There's a review and approval of warrants. And then there is financial review at February 29, 2016. Do any members of the board want to pull any items from consent?
Mr. Chair, I would like to look separately at the billing for legal services, and that's one that I'd just like to look at some more itemization and how we're authorizing that.
Okay, so then perhaps we should just go ahead and pull that item. Let's do that.
Okay.
Mary, anything?
No, I'm fine, thank you.
Okay. Do any members of the community want to speak to items 4A and 4C, which have remained on the consent agenda?
Good evening. I'm Julie Tacker, and I would like to also underscore my concern regarding the legal bills. Mr. Trujillo and Ms. Stockton combined, it's too much again. But I think the most surprising warrant here is nearly $11,000 for Kennedy Jenks. You do not have a contract with Kennedy Jenks. So I don't know what this work is for, and I think it's premature to be paying for anything until you see some work product.
Anyone else?
Chair Schultz, directors, it's my understanding, and I apologize for missing the meeting, but it's my understanding that there is indication that rates are going to be increased based on a need to raise funding for the redundancy. So in that vein is the point of my comment, and that is that the legal fees that I'm seeing seem to be above what's normally appropriate. And so I'm not going to sit here and nitpick and try to go over every bill. That's not my job. That's your job. But I would just ask you to consider whether it's dealing with everyday litigation, everyday issues, or the past lawsuits. The public is watching, and what they see and what they perceive is very important. And for this board to ask for what I understand to be a 20% increase and not keep tight rein on other expenses flies in the face of respect for the ratepayers. So I would ask you to really thoughtfully consider, and maybe in a closed session, quiz your legal counsel over a number of the warrants that are before you, because there are two current warrants that are under slightly different names but are basically for the same thing. And it's again, I don't want to criticize because there might be an absolute reason for doing what they're doing. But from a public perception standpoint, it looks like there's a lot of outflow and you're asking for increases to increase the revenue in to the district. And it's just, it's troubling because I still don't know how we as a district explain to the ratepayers the mismanagement that's gone on in the past, because there clearly was some, and it lies right at the feet of this board. The things that John Wallace did, while I believe they border on the edge of criminal, ultimately this board approved those expenses. So you're going to be under scrutiny, rightly or wrongly, based on past practice. So I'm just asking you to take pause, have a private conversation with your legal staff, and confirm that you're getting a bang for your buck. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Is there anyone else?
We will be discussing later tonight our favorite subject, and that is paying attorneys and this whole lawsuit, because we're in the litigation business, obviously. We spent over $1 million fighting a lawsuit that will be discussed later tonight. And we didn't increase rates for a long time. And now, instead of having two rate increases back to back, you're just going to put them together and hit us with one good one. And the folks in Oceano, I don't even know if they realize that they haven't been billed, and so come December, they're going to get a whopping huge bill. And it doesn't sit well with me. You know, the increases, if we had managed the money better, we could have done this incrementally where it wouldn't have hurt people the way it's hurting everyone. And, you know, that's really a shame. And then we still have, I think it's just a mere $250,000 that Oceano still owes the sanitation. We need to get our money in order, and we need to realize where it's going and for what, and start straightening up the books financially, I think. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, let me bring it back to the board. And we are on the consent agenda items 4A and 4B. Someone?
I'll move.
Sorry, 4A and 4C. I'm sorry, we pulled 4B. So 4A and 4C.
I'll move approval of items 4A and 4C, which is the meeting minutes of March 2nd, 2016, and the financial review of February 29th, 2016.
Can I? We're in the middle of a motion.
Well, I'm going to second that motion because we're going to discuss the warrants separately. So that's, we're still going to come back to that.
Okay, great.
Okay. So with that, let's let's just do a roll call vote now.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes. So now we're going to go, we're going to take up item 4B, which is review and approval of the warrants. So, Jim, do you want to give your comments, or do you want to have staff give maybe a brief presentation?
I think I'd like to just withhold the two billings for district legal counsel until I can look at the detailed billing summary more closely, and we can understand all of the issues with that. And then the question was asked about the Kennedy Jinx bill, and I would like to share an explanation of that if we have one.
Okay. John, Kennedy Jinx, you?
On Kennedy Jinx, I'm sorry.
Okay.
On Kennedy Jinx, it's part of our pre-design contract. It's not part of the current contract. In the pre-design contract, we'd spent probably 70%. And so what we've done is asked them at the end of all that to spec out the potential or potential cogeneration unit to so that we can balance that against the cogeneration project that PG&E is running. So it's actually just it's a continuation of the pre-design funding, which is already funded and already in the contract. And that's it's not part of we haven't even confirmed a contract with them going forward, so that's what it's part of, and it's part of pre-design for the redundancy with the potential of cogen offset. We're going to double our energy costs, so we're looking to a way to offset that with a cogeneration unit.
Okay, very good. And I know, Jim, you were talking about holding back on the for Mr. Trujillo and Stockton. John, do you have any additional information, or is that something that is going to take some time to provide to the board?
I did look at it, and I'm sending the board the breakdown. When we did look at it, most of the cost, particularly Ms. Stockton and Mr. Trujillo, were at least 60% of the costs were items that are extraordinary and one time in possibly several years. For instance, the Prop 218 hearings and the proceedings and the prep for getting ready for that. The Knutson, end of the Knutson report, and the dealing with the possible litigation. All those things are things that aren't going to happen again, but they're happening right now. And again, we spend a lot of time reestablishing our template contracts, because we do have a lot of contracts we're trying to work through right now, and we're working back and forth with Ms. Stockton with getting the contracts that, you know, going forward, I could look at, fill in the knot lines, and just have legal review them. But it took a while to finally put stuff together that legal was comfortable with and that was acceptable to our contractors. So there were a number of things. I'd say there's probably 60% of things there that will not occur again in the near future. That being said, again, I forward it. Some of the information, I'll forward all that information for the board to review and move forward.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, recognizing that most of the work that's done is, you know, without beyond reproach and was well done and it's already completed, I would be willing to at least authorize on the combined billing, say $10,000, which is about 66% of the billing. I don't want to hold up, unnecessarily hold up appropriate payment.
Okay.
But I would like to look at some of that in greater detail.
So why don't you hold that thought, and let me see if there's anyone from the community I would like to address this item.
I just want to apologize for speaking out of turn. I misheard when the item was going to come up, so my comments that I spoke previously actually relate to this item, so thank you.
No worries, Tim. No worries.
I would like to... It's 2 weeks to hold the checks. I don't think they're going to starve to death. Hold the checks, go through the invoices with a fine-tooth comb. If there's anything that gives you heartburn, ask the questions. And if there's any way to reconcile that charge, then do so. 2 weeks, that's your job. Just take the time and do it. Do it right.
Okay. Is there anyone else?
Good evening. I'm not here to address anything about the attorney's bills. The last time I came to the podium, I talked about the warrants lacking 2016 payroll on them. And then I went home that night after the district said absolutely there was 2016 payroll being provided on the warrants. And I created a spreadsheet and I provided it to all of the current board. I apologize, I didn't probably get it to an alternate. The last time before tonight there was payroll on the warrants at all in 2016 was to cover payroll through December 25th. At the meeting last time, there was no 2016 payroll. There is 2016 payroll tonight, but it's for February. There's no January payroll on any warrant in 2016. I'm not making this up. I don't know what else to do. The dumbing down of this report may be necessary for others, but it's not necessary for me. This is smoke and mirrors. This is not January payroll on the warrants in 2016 at any time. Please get someone in there that knows their job. Please. Please.
Okay.
I'm going to ask this, but it was brought up by Ms. McLaughlin last meeting. There were some warrants. They did not, there was one missing, I believe, and she had asked for that to be produced and what the warrant was for, so I would like an answer to that tonight, please.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one else come forward. John, do you have a record of the one missing warrant that had been, was brought up?
Yes, I sent it to the board. It had been on a prior one. It had been on a warrant. Remember, we had the one that was adjusted, so it was actually on a prior warrant. It was the last one on the prior warrant. I sent an example. The board has an example, so I'm not sure what that's about. And with regard to payroll, I'll check into it and get back to you if okay. I can.
Mary, you have some?
Mr. Schultz, Chairman Schultz, I'd like to just point out that I am the primary seat holder. I'm not an alternate. I am the primary, so just for the record, that's okay. Most people don't know that. I have not received anything from the district regarding last year's warrants, nor I get the packet once in a while, but Mr. Guerrero forwards me on most of the packet. But I apologize. I don't get any attachments, and I didn't get those warrants. And when I saw this spreadsheet, I, too, was very concerned that payroll was not included in this, and the public continually has brought up the issue of payroll and benefits, and I think it's time that the board step up to the plate and deal with this in a very thorough way. We talk about not, you know, repeating the past, but doesn't mean we make new mistakes. So, either you put it on the next agenda or we hold this warrant pack. I can't take and throw two payrolls in a warrant pack and then try to decipher which payroll that's coming from. Is it coming from December? Is it coming from January? It's kind of a guessing game, and I too kind of was mystified by this. So and I don't know how to rectify that.
Okay. Jim, you have anything?
No, obviously we want to make sure that the expenses of the district are accurately represented for approval by the board and for the information of the public. So I agree with Director Lucy that it's vital that the payroll information is presented in the board packets as we normally expect.
Okay, so we do have a series of some warrants before us tonight. Do we want to send the entire packet back? I mean, then that means we're not paying some of our bills that seem to be legitimate expenses, or do we want to go through this one by one? What's the pleasure of the board?
Well, it appears to me that the payroll from February 5th through the 19th is included on this warrant package, but that again begs the question of January's payroll and payroll from the 19th through the end of February. So that may be taken up at the next meeting, but I would have expected to see the January payroll on the warrants.
Mr. Schultz, oh, go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry, Jim.
You're done, Jim?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the 2.5 to 2.19 is a month later, pretty much, because it's on the 3.16 to 2015-16 year. So it's coming in the first week of March. I'm just trying to get my record straight so I can make footnotes on this.
So do we want to continue this with some direction?
I'll say this, Board. February 5th and 19th are typical of what this district's done since I've been here. We record the last month. And it's something that the board can certainly direct us to have the most current on the most on the warrant register, but this is typical. I can't speak to January because I need to look back at that, but this is the warrant as it's listed currently on this particular warrant register is what's normal for this district. And if the board wants us to list it differently, certainly we can do that moving forward. But there's nothing odd about the way it's listed for this district on this warrant register.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
Good evening. I could speak for Wendy Stockton. We have no objection to having our bills pulled and reviewed by the board. We'll be happy to answer any questions. But as far as bifurcating it out 60%, I think that'd be an accounting nightmare, and I agree that it should just be pulled, and we'll be happy to answer all questions.
Okay, so what if we move forward and we pull those two off of this warrant, and then we give some direction to staff regarding payroll, and maybe put that on the next agenda and have some discussion about how we can do that in a more transparent way?
Okay, in that case, I would move that we pull for consideration the warrants for Mr. Trujillo, Ms. Stockton, and that we approve the remaining warrants. That would be one motion, and then I'll make another motion to deal with the payroll, I guess.
All right, then I will.
I'll second it.
Okay. So then let's just do roll call on that one quickly.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes. Okay, Jim, you have the floor.
Then I would further move that we direct staff to assure that the payroll since the last time payroll appeared on the warrant register, which I believe included billing through December, that from that point to February 5th, be placed on the next warrant register, and that as well as any current payment to date after February 19th.
Okay. And then I'll second that.
I have a question on that.
Okay.
I have no idea what FGL Inc. stands for, with no budget line item. For $2,032. I don't want to pull it. I just want it.
It's Fruit Growers Laboratory. It's where we get our.
So it's a lab. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So are you guys clear on the motion that was made? I just seconded regarding payroll being shown for the time period specified.
Yes, sir. We are.
Okay. Okay. Roll call.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
And can I ask that we have that added to the agenda?
Yes.
A future discussion regarding payroll and benefits.
I believe that was part of the motion.
Well, it specifically dealt
with... If it was included, if that was your intent, I'm fine with
that. It specifically dealt with the payroll.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And if we need to expand that, we can do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Plant Superintendent Report. Mr. Clemens.
Good evening once again, Chairman Schultz, Board of Directors. We'll start off with operations, and operations are effluent numbers are looking very good. Our fecal coli numbers are very down. We're just about online for pounds of chlorine used per day. Our BOD efficiency removal is 93% biochemical oxygen demand, which is a measure of the strength of the waste in the water. All those things being considered, the plant's running good and efficiently at this point, and we expect it to continue to do so. With regard to maintenance, we had to replace the primary number one Moyno sludge pump. We had to dismounted the piping at our old sludge thickener. We repaired a flusher screen at our secondary clarifier scum trough, which involved a confined space entry. Cut down uprooted trees at the front gate and removed the debris. We had a couple. We had one tree fall on the gate and another one was uprooted. So when we came in, we called a tree service, got those removed right away. We replaced a filter at our groundwater well. We use our groundwater well for irrigation at the plant, and our filter was out. And our staff performed a number of work orders. Regard to ongoing projects, Garrington and Associate is still working with staff to ensure the integrity of the AG sewer bridge. The most recent development was that we had to get an environmental expert. Engineers weren't equipped to handle the environmental portion, so they wanted legal to do it. And then talking to Ms. Stockton, she thought that the district would come out better having an environmental agency do it. And she passed it back to me, and we've contacted Merck, who does these environmental things. So as soon as we get these things, the environmental thing worked out, then we can, we're going to be looking at issuing an RFP to get the actual work done on it. And we're working with...
John, can I ask you a quick question on
yes.
that, please? What is the timeline for the bridge that we're looking at? A guesstimate. I don't expect you to narrow it down to just a guesstimate. It's been going on for a long time, and I have had a couple people ask me about it.
Let me bring that to the next meeting. Let me talk okay. with our engineers. I can say this. We budgeted $209,000 for it originally. So far, we spent $20,000. So even though it's taking time, we're not spending a whole lot of money thus far, because most of the money is going to be spent on a portion where we actually fix it. So that's where we are right now.
Okay. Thank you.
We're working. We issued an RFP for the grit removal system. We had a mandatory meeting at the plant for bidders. There were, I think, in the order of nine potential bidders there. And so I think our bidding deadline is March 26th. And so we're at the bidding phase. It won't require any more design. It's a pretty simple structure. So at this point, it's just bidding for construction. When we award a bid, then at that point, the bid winner will order the equipment, and that should be about 2 months, and then it should take a month or less to install. So we're looking to have the grit removal system in by June, early March, April, May. Yeah, sometime late June, early July, we expect to have it installed and up and going in that particular project. We're working. I have a meeting with our engineers tomorrow in discussion for a mechanical bar screen. We're about prepared to issue an RFP for that particular project. Once again, it being a fairly simple project, it's not doesn't require a lot of engineering. The bulk of the cost is going to be in the equipment and the installation portion. Expect to be issuing the RFP in April, sometime in May, maybe awarding the contract. A couple months again to wait for equipment, and we're looking at August perhaps to have our mechanical bar screen installed. That's about the timeline we're looking for that. Secondary process redundancy project, permitting update. If the board like, we can agendize permitting, but a quick update is that we issued on the 28th of February, I believe, a digital copy to the Coastal Commission. And we did actually receive a response back, I think it was on the 11th, saying that they had received the digital copy, but they had been really busy, so they hadn't had a chance to look over it yet, and then they wanted that, they were wondering when we would send a hard copy in. And so we did send a hard copy in, I believe it was on the 11th. And so they received a hard copy, they sent back notice to us, to the district, notifying us that they had received it and thanking us for having it in there. It's the environmental portion. We actually submitted the mitigated neg deck from 2010, which was a complete neg deck declaration. We'll see what Coastal Commission has to say about that. But our permit application is submitted. It has been received and acknowledged by the Coastal Commission, and now the ball is in their court as to what we'll be doing next with that. With regard to the satellite water resource recovery facility, we're waiting. That goes back to the board at Arroyo Grande, I believe, on the 22nd, and their board will consider what they want to do with it. If they agree to move forward, our board has already agreed to move forward, and we'll move forward with that study as it's been rescoped. Still working with PG&E on a possible energy conservation project. Again, the main part of that being a possible cogeneration unit. Cogeneration, we tried it before. It didn't work out. I worked with them before. They did work. Given that we're going to double our energy costs with our new process, if we can get a cogeneration unit in, we will stabilize cost. And even if PG&E costs go up, we won't feel it because we'll be generating our own energy. So we're hoping that that pans out for us. Staff is preparing a short-term emergency backup plan in case of a FFR failure. We have the we've ordered a bunch of piping. Our staff will be installing a portion of that piping. Jim Gehring was at the plant today, and he talked with our supervisor and our staff about the structure of that and how we would attach it to the fixed film reactor. So that's an ongoing project. Hopefully we'll have that done in the next month, and that'll give us some relief, very short-term relief in case of failure, but it's better than none at all. And then we're working to restore our GIS manhole mapping system. We had a GIS to map our manholes and where they were, their elevations. Somehow that got away from us, so now we're working with, we got two bids, one from Nunley Associates, one from Canon Corp on reinstalling our GIS system. Also, our chairman made a visit to the plant this week. He spent an hour going around talking with staff. That is always encouraging. I'd like to thank you. The staff was very encouraged with your visit, and we were able to go over and visualize some of the things that we're doing out there. So that's always an opportunity when our board members come by. In miscellaneous, staff attended an in-house safety meeting on sodium bisulfite safety, and we did attend the kickoff meeting for our chlorine feed controller project to have a different feed chemical controller system installed at our chlorine contact chamber. With that, that's the end of my report. I'll be more than happy to entertain any questions the board has.
Thank you for that report, John. Mary, do you have any more questions of Mr. Clemens?
No, I just have a statement. I did get two calls this week of people complimenting the sanitation district. They hadn't had any transient populations coming out of that area, and they wanted me to let you know that they really do appreciate that. So it was two separate households that called.
And thank you. And in that vein, another thing was mentioned earlier in the meeting about billing. We passed the bill on to an agency that's going to mail it out. So the residents of Oceana will be receiving their sanitation bill for the first half of the fiscal year anytime now. So I wanted to get it out as soon as possible. Again, it's going to be inconvenient for a lot of folks anyway. So the sooner we can get it out, the sooner we can deal with it and kind of move past it.
And so, John, you contracted that out?
We put together a list, and we contracted the mailing portion. Yeah, the part where, you know, someone's putting it on envelopes, putting it in envelopes.
Yeah, I know. I know what a mailing house is. When I made that motion that the billing be handled by the sanitation district, it that was part of it, that you would handle it from the beginning to the end.
Okay. Jim, you have any questions?
No questions at this time.
Okay. John, thank you, and let the staff know that I actually, it was a really nice visit. It was good to see everyone and the work that they're doing out there. I really appreciated them and you spending all that quality time with me. I do want to ask you regarding the secondary process redundancy report, and thank you for giving us a little bit of the timeline. February 28th, application was filed electronically and then sent, the hard copy sent. The one thing I did want to ask is, you talked about the mitigated negative declaration that was previously prepared in 2010, and I don't know if you'd had a chance to talk to Mr. Rickenbach and just kind of, did he give you a feel for his thought process with respect to submitting that to Coastal staff?
We did look at it, and when I first found it in our resolutions, and at that point, he and Mr. Nunley was here, didn't want to submit it unless we had the corroborating documents for it. So we dug a little deeper. We found the minutes where it listed that they'd gone through a 30-day period and all this. And then Mr. Nunley went further and contacted Mr. Wallace to get all the documentation involved. And when he did that, we received everything involved with it. And it was a very complete process. So it is 6 years old, but when it was done very thoroughly. We aren't sure how the Coastal Commission is going to react to it. Certainly, they can call it old, or they may say, hey, this is complete. We just need you to update it with regard to new issues like sea level rise. And so we thought that this, again, one of the reasons we wanted to retain Mr. Rickenbach early was to get the process started. So In some ways, this still gets the process started, because if we waited and went through a regular engineer, it would probably be another 3 weeks before we even start the mitigated neg deck process. So in a sense, even if it's another 30 days, it probably puts us way ahead, and it comes back. However it comes back, it will still be ahead in terms of our timeline. Again, I know Director Hill was really concerned about our timeline with regard to getting our permitting and not starting our design engineering too soon. So all that being said, we did discuss it in depth. We did take a good look. We did try to anticipate what we thought the Coastal Commission would do with it, and we're very comfortable with the idea that no matter what they come back, it still puts us ahead. It begins the process of the communication back and forth. And so if you'd like to add something, Mike, then... Mr. Nunley is here.
Yeah, and that would be great as he's coming up, because you obviously anticipated where I was going, because I was wondering regarding the California Coastal Commission staff's or the sea level rise guidelines that came out in August 2015, because I think when we talk about a document that was done, we want to take a look and see if there have been changing circumstances or conditions surrounding the project. So, Mr. Nunley, you have any additional information?
Sure, I'd be glad to. So the key items to us were the project description itself had not changed. If Coastal Commission reviews the packet and comes back and asks for additional information, wants us to address sea level rise impacts or the impacts of the updated flood studies that were done in 2012, changing the datum, changing the elevation datum from the 29 to the 88, there may be things they ask us to do. But in our opinion, it was best to get the complete packet to them, because that was... This project description really hasn't changed since around 2005 when it comes down to it, in terms of the facilities that you're building. The flooding issues are same level of concern that they were many years ago. All the issues we talk about now are known. There may be some more specifics they'll ask us for, but our opinion was go ahead and present it, because, again, it was a certified neg deck, or an approved neg deck, I guess. Adopted neg deck is the correct term.
And was there communications with Coastal staff prior to sending that? Because I'm, in my planning mind, I'm just thinking that I would have taken the older document and said, well, have there been any changes in regulations or guidelines that requires me to freshen this up? So I'm just wondering, was there a step taken to...
I can talk to Mr. Rickenbach and see what level of discussion he had with him in advance. About 2 weeks prior to submitting the full packet, we submitted just the application itself without the other items, just in draft form, basically, because we'd started talking to Daniel Robertson there and try to get some initial input from them. So we he did try that route first. He did include with the neg deck, he did include, you know, a brief description of the history of that neg deck. So we did present it as, you know, it was done in 2010 based on the findings at the time. So I can speak to that much.
Yeah, I mean, that would be good to know, because it seems like that would be something we could anticipate that they want to know about.
Yes, sir. And my sense, too, is having worked with the Coastal Commission before, is there will be a list of additional items they'll ask for. The benefit to getting the complete package is that it will give us an opportunity to see what the extent of that list is and what those items might be. Some may be items we would anticipate, some may not. So our thought was we go ahead and we submit the full package. We'd be as open and honest about what was done or what wasn't, what hasn't been done, and get it in front of them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sir.
Mary?
Excuse me, sir. That's okay.
Didn't mean to walk away from you.
No,
I'm sorry.
That's fine.
Glad to answer any questions you have.
And I was going to talk about this later on, but since you brought up flooding, let's talk about flooding for a second and the location of the sanitation district. And some things haven't changed, but the thing that has changed is how we view our coast on the coast of California and what we want going in our water and the increase in sea levels and blah, 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 blah. We can go on and on, right? But I'm looking at a multi-jurisdictional local hazard mitigation plan, right? And this mitigation plan is up to the Coastal Commission to see all the plans in the area. So I look at this plan and I go, let's see how they describe the sanitation district. Have you seen this?
I have not, but I'm an engineer.
I really fully apologize for just ripping through this, right?
So, Mary, what plan is that? Who's the author?
Well, actually, the City of Arroyo Grande signed off on it. The City of Grover Beach signed off on it. Lucia Mar School District signed off on it. South County Sanitation District signed off on it. And it was created by David Math. And it's an emergency preparedness coordinator for the Five Cities Fire Authority. And so the Five Cities Fire Authority is expected to know all the mitigation plans in their area that they provide service to, okay? So the sanitation district being one of them. So, and I haven't had a thorough chance to totally read this, but when I go to flooding, right? So on the sanitation district, has picture of the sand district, it says severity, medium, probability, high. And so it is the Coastal Commission's job to search out these documents because this one isn't a historical piece of guiding principles. It's current. It was originally created in 2013. It was revised in 14, it was modified in 15, and approved December of 2015. So then I just did a couple little stickies here. And it goes on to describe the sand district. And the reason why I bring this up, right, is because it's the Coastal Commission, you know.
Yes, ma'am.
So that's why, so we have to have good answers to things they want to know too. So the priority they've listed as high. It says, now, as far as the flooding goes, from what I can, to minimize flooding damages and losses due to flooding in that area, the sanitation district has pretty much said, the county will handle that. And I don't think that's a good answer for the Coastal Commission. I don't think I just don't think that's going to fly. So, and I'll be happy to give this to you. Okay. So, it also, what was very disturbing to me is it listed the $1.1 million fine in it. And because that's a little surprising that it would be listed, but it it is a problem. So I'll be happy to give this. I'm going to hold on to this till we get to the contract, but because I do want to use it in the contract, but I'll be happy to turn it over to staff and they can forward it on to the rest of the board or however.
I would suggest this is probably a public document. You can contact the Five Cities Fire Authority, because I imagine going forward you're going to need all this information. Mm-hmm. So thanks.
Be glad to, and I'd be glad to speak about how flood mitigation's typically handled at a wastewater plant, if you'd like me to.
I don't want to, because we're still on his report, on the superintendent's report. I was asking him questions because he brought up the redundancy, the permitting, and he gave the updates. I was asking him questions, trying to be very focused on that. But I think I'm giving you latitude, so you're okay. Okay.
Served you.
All right.
Okay. If it's the board chooses, we'll be more than happy to bring back a more in-depth staff report with regard to flood mitigation and those type of things. So, but moving forward on our staff report, super's report, I think we were talking about redundancy and permitting and regard to that, and what we had done with regard to submitting our CDP application. And so it's a complete application. It was submitted on the 11th in paper. We got acknowledgement from the Coastal Commission, and that's where we are with that.
Okay. I think when the time's appropriate, let's have more conversation around that whole process. And I think we're talking about a contract later, and I think the issue of flooding are valid issues. So we'll have that conversation. But let's finish up on the report itself and come back to the other. So let me open this. No worries. Let me open this up to the public.
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker. And first, I think we need to look at the order of this, in that what the redundancy project is all about is an aging fixed film reactor and mitigating that piece of equipment. Your staff is working with Gehring to develop a short-term emergency backup plan. That's the plan I want to see. I want to know what it is, what it costs, and how long it's backing you up. Because what the fixed film reactor, from what I understand, the parts that are in there, apparently you've got parts sitting around waiting for the day when the thing crashes and you're ready to replace them. But rather than have partially treated sewage head straight for the ocean, this backup plan, whatever it is going to divert that flow and hopefully treat it some other fashion. That's the part I don't know. So, if we've got the backup plan, then there's no race to a redundancy project that's $19 million. You want to go into this methodically. Now, Mr. Wallace was on a methodic path with the mitigated negative declaration. There's documents that were submitted that have Mr. Hill's name on them. A couple years long process to get that mitigated negative declaration. What was submitted in the packet of exhibits that I don't know if you got yet, but I've skimmed them today, and the newest document in that packet is June 7th, 2010. That's the most recent document of exhibits that was sent to Coastal. Guess what happened on December 19th, 2010? There's no mention of it in this application. And again, I only skimmed 160 pages. It identifies some of the risks around the site and what's associated with the landscape there. And it mentions Arroyo Grande Creek being just 100 feet away. Yet I did not see any mention of Meadow Creek, which is the creek that flooded you. So while this approach to get them all the documents and let's hear back from them sounds to me like an exercise in expensive, because Mr. Rickenbach is going to be jumping through hoops to answer the Coastal Commission when he should have in January, when he got the contract, begun the CEQA process for a mitigated negative declaration. He waited. Whatever stopped him. It's middle of March, and that process hasn't begun. And he might have been able to dust off some of these old documents for information, but the fact that these old dates are even on there, I think, is going to just delay you. And we have a timeline in the next item on the Kennedy Jenks contract that has a best case scenario of a permit in June, but you're going to begin to spend the money, and I'll be back at that time. I did send you a letter on Saturday, Mary. I don't know if Matt forwarded it to you. Here's a copy. I just think Mr. Rickenbach has an interesting approach, and it's certainly not one that makes any sense to me. He was supposed to do the CEQA. That's in his contract. He's not doing it. This is another firm 5 years ago, 6 years ago. So, I'm afraid you're going to get stalled. And with that time, you are now underway on a recycled water study. That's what Coastal wants all the coastal sewer plants to be doing, is recycling water. And I really do, and I know I've said it here, I heard Mr. Guerrero say it here, hate to see you throw $20 million at a site that can't sustain your infrastructure for the long haul. You're in a wetland, you're at the confluence of two creeks, and the ocean is rising right into your property.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, this is just the superintendent's report. This is a receive and file. Okay, let's move on to board actions, item 6A, review of bylaws. Mr. Clemens, are you giving this staff report?
Yes, sir. Staff is recommending that the board by motion approve the amendments to the bylaws. We went back through the tapes, and this item was originally presented at the March 2nd meeting. The board asked that it be brought back in a legislative format with the following changes: that item 2.6 A and B be deleted, that item 2.6 D include and have the option of stating name and residence, item 2.9 be consistent with item 1.3, and item 6.4, the word shall be replaced with the word should. Item 6.5 have appeared after opinions and insert the sentence civil discourse is encouraged, and we made those changes. If Mr. Trio has anything to add, certainly can.
No, Mr. Chairman, I don't have any additional comments.
Great, thank you. Any questions from staff?
No.
Of course. I'm sorry. Mr. Trio, I guess this would probably be for you. Our bylaws call for a review of the bylaws beginning in the year February, right? And so what made this bylaw a priority? What, as I look at the other bylaws that are probably a little bit more pressing in my mind, what made you say that this particular bylaw be the one we start with, that one is more important?
Thank you, Board Member Lucy. The bylaws require the District Council to review them annually. We did review them annually. Prior to that, at one of the public meetings, I don't have, my memory's not that good, but it was prior to the date due for the bylaw review, we received direction from the board to take a look at Section 2.9 only, specifically because of the...
Who said that? I'm sorry.
It was direction from the board during a public meeting. Section 2.9.
Okay.
And the reason we looked at that section and recommended changes to it was to give some type of predictability and consistency for staff to know who to direct emails to or communications to for upcoming board meetings. So legal counsel made that recommendation at the staff presentation was given, and at that meeting we were given direction by the board to also include changes to 2.6, 6.4, and 6.5. Those changes came from suggestions from the public that were adopted by the board and directed staff to make those changes, and that is the report that you see before you tonight.
Okay. I, too, watched the meeting last week. That's what I love about AGP. It's real time. And I also want to thank the people who did public testimony, because at first I thought, why is this a priority unless it's personal? Mm. And it's about personalities, not about policies. And then several of the public speakers confirmed my suspicions. So I would like you to take that into consideration. And the likelihood of a meeting occurring with two alternates is minimal. And I didn't see that any place in there. But also, too, is that I saw other things like 1.6. Why is it a priority that the chairman attend the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission? I mean, what does the Planning Commission have to do with this district? So things like that need to be cleaned up, you know, not out and out changing policies to block somebody's participation because you don't always like what they say or how they say it or how they look or whatever. So 1.6 says somebody has to attend the Planning Commission. And, you know, and then also, too, is that the definition of special. Well, we're going with a legislative definition, so I'm in no way an attorney, nor would I, this is not my area, but isn't special supposed to be in bold if we're going to use legislative definition of it? So there's got to be some way to define special, to call a special meeting. So what are we using? We're using legislative language to define special. Otherwise, you have people just making up definitions. And so as I went through this, there was the public comment had gone from 30 minutes to 20 minutes, you know, and then back to 30 minutes. 4.2 says 20 minutes. You know, I'm great with 30 minutes, 45 minutes, however long it takes to get to it. So you see that there was a lot of things that, you know, 4.3 is that, well, let me just back up for a minute. I think what was trying to occur here on 1.6 by going to planning commissions is I think that you were trying to get to a point where you could speak on behalf of the sanitation district. Anybody can attend these meetings, but can you speak on behalf of the sanitation department? No, you need to have approval for that. And so I think 1.6 is a poor definition of trying to get there. You want me to read the whole thing?
Yeah, you might. Yeah, if you're going to. Hold on, please.
Well, I'll read it in my brain if I'm going to answer my own question. But I'm relatively confident we want to give the GM. So I'm not going to stop talking, and I'm not going to read it. So I ask that it be consistent, and I ask this board is to figure out why it was of such grave importance that you talked for an hour and 10 minutes about blocking alternates from participating on the board. You know, so I have a bunch of changes, but I'm not going to.
Okay.
The ethics training. That's another one. You know, that needs to be flushed out.
Okay. Jim, do you have any?
Actually, no. I think the author, I read the 1.6 as being an authorization to attend and so that the district could speak with one voice and in those meetings if necessary.
Okay. And that's how I read it as well. And then let me open this up to the public and then I'll make a comment or two.
You can borrow mine.
Come on.
Thank you.
Okay, everyone, please.
One of the reasons that was brought up from me was because of this WWF tag team that we seem to have an alternate and a permanent doing. Mary, I thought you were an alternate, to tell you the truth. I didn't know. So it gets really confusing when you have Matt here for two meetings, you have Mary Lucy jump in for one, you get Matt for a couple more, Mary Lucy jumps back in. It gets confusing. And it was clear here that there seems to be some confusion with this. So I thought the bylaws were going to figure out who was supposed to be up there the majority of time. One thing I am going to ask in closing is, are we going to have it that the whoever tells the board or the head chief, who's going to be here that week? That's the main thing I'm wondering about. And on that, I'd like to say that Mary Lucy did mention earlier she's not getting the packets. And I think that's part of the problem. Who are we supposed to send them to? Who's showing up that week? So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Wells.
Julie Tacker, and the only thing with regard to the 1.6, the chair and his or her, and in his or her absence, the vice chair are authorized to attend the meetings of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission, meetings of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors, meetings between the district staff and the water board personnel, including either Regional Water Quality Control Board staff or State Water Board staff, without compensation, except reimbursement for use of his or her personal vehicle. So when there's a meeting, they can go without compensation. You can all go, of course.
Right.
But they don't get paid to represent the district. So that's what that one's about.
But the language...
Go ahead and let her finish. Go ahead.
Yeah. Julie, so, finish. I mean, it's without compensation, I think, is the key. When... How do I want to start this? You have a three-member board. You have three alternates. We have seen this happen when two alternates are sitting at the dais. And we've seen that the district becomes paralyzed because those two are not comfortable taking the measures of the regulars. Mary, let's go back to the tape. You said it. You said it. You weren't comfortable. You didn't have the history. This, that you are the designee from Oceano, is true. Apparently, you have never set that straight with this district. It's on the letterhead that your agendas are posted that you are an alternate. This has been going on for a year and a half. At any time, you could have changed this, and you chose tonight to change it or clarify it. This district spent $1,200 on a Best in Krieger, and this is for your benefit because you weren't here. Best in Krieger, special legal counsel opinion on the health and safety code that requires the presiding officer from each of your agencies to be seated on this board. When that question came to Oceano, and this is on the tape, you were not comfortable taking the primary chair. You were comfortable with Mr. Guerrero, with his longevity, with his expertise, and all the years he's been on this board, and you wanted him to be here. So that hasn't been the case. You have flip-flopped, alternated back and forth. It became relevant last meeting when the rate increase was implemented or adopted on the second reading, because the first person was you and you voted no. The second person voting was Mr. Guerrero, and he voted yes. So when you have inconsistencies, that adds up. So that is a separate question about alternates and how they serve. The question whether or not Oceano was designated the vice chair is what is being addressed in this item, is that Oceano wasn't. Mr. Guerrero was, because of his expertise, his longevity, and his history with the district.
Julie, I need you to wrap.
I know, John. Thank you for your indulgence. So it's not about you necessarily. You're making it about you. It's because of the who is seated there and their expertise, and that's what it's become for Mr. Guerrero with the 5 or so years he's been on this board. So I would recommend, if you have 2 alternates that are going to come to a meeting, cancel the meeting, because you are paralyzed and you're wasting everyone's time.
Okay, so anyone else?
Good evening. I stand before you as Sharon Brown. She asked me to speak on her behalf briefly. She's from Grover, in case you didn't know. She wanted to point out or have you take into consideration that alternates, she considers them more of like a substitute teacher. So you wouldn't put a substitute teacher in charge of decision making for the most part. So to have the majority be alternates, or maybe even potentially have 3 alternates to run a meeting, seems a little interesting. So the thought is, if 2 can't make it, why can't the 3rd primary board member just automatically be the chair? They have the most history, the most knowledge at that point, and then there's no issue. If we have all 3 alternates, I think that's a separate item to address. Now, speaking as April McLaughlin, who lives in the 5 cities, I swear to God, I had no idea that you were not an alternate, Miss Lucy. I apologize. I think the reason I have that confusion is because Matt Guerrero was named the vice chair, and I assume that meant he was the main person. So that really does need to be cleaned up. That's not even an item I'm looking at, and I'm confused. So clearly the general public is probably confused as well. If we're going to name people as positions, then we need to know that they're the primaries. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing no one else come forward. Interesting conversation and discussion. And yes, there has been confusion over who the primary and the alternate is from Oceano. And I think I had nominated Matt as vice chair because I was on, and that was my understanding. So I think there's 1 or 2 ways. I think this is good in concept, because I think if there are 2 alternates, that the primary member sitting should be the chair, or it should be run the meeting. But giving that authority to the chair, I think, makes sense. I'm not sure why you aren't getting packets. And, John, can we make sure that all 6 people get the packets and the information? Because I think it's just like in a jury, when you have alternate jurors and someone is not able to make it, they don't hold it up and let's wait for everyone to get well. And we sit on other committees where alternates come and they're expected to be up to speed. And so we really need to, that's all on us, to make sure that we are here or our alternates are here and everyone's up to speed and ready to vote. So I find it really ironic that most of the items in these bylaws have been there for years, And this year, all of a sudden, everything is, and I know there were some speakers last time that brought up some issues, and I'm kind of scratching my head going, well, okay, if we want to complete redo of these bylaws, that's fine. But I know that, John, you were exactly right. There was some board direction to do this. There's been the community members asking us to do this, and so that's why it came back, Mary, and we're trying to get it resolved, and we're certainly not trying to make it about an individual, but about the situation that we find ourselves in. So I guess where I'm at is either we leave this in, or I'm going to request that we come back and we rediscuss the issue of the vice chair. I mean, so that's kind of where I find myself on this. Jim, do you have anything?
No, I'm actually prepared to endorse the revised bylaws as presented. I think that's what we discussed at the last meeting and agreed to, and staff has brought it back following the direction of the board, and I have no issues with it as presented.
Well, just for clarification, I'll be sitting at the Sand District. And Matt, if by chance I'm not here available, then Matt will be sitting in. But yes, I'll be sitting at the dais from now on.
And thank you for that clarification. I think that really...
Yeah, so there isn't any confusion. On 1.6, what I was concerned about was the part that wasn't read, which was shall attend these meetings. Doesn't say shall speak on behalf of the Sand District. It just says that you can attend the meetings. And so that was my concern on 1.6. You know, I am very comfortable with the work of the district, and I'm actually, I do a lot of reading, and so...
Maybe the solution on 1.6 is that we just add another statement that basically says, I mean, everyone's going to attend, but we want the chair... We need to pick one person if they're going there to represent the district on a specific item. So that's really what we're trying to get at.
So then say that.
Well, that's what I'm saying now is let's include that language. And then I think the others, I agree with Jim. Staff has done what they were directed to by the board the last time. But I think that's a good clarification for 1.6. So at the time someone wants to make a motion to add language to clarify that, I'm okay with that.
I move that we allow legal counsel to provide the proper language.
You can, if we take a 5-minute break and you come up with just some language on 1.6 just to clarify the intent of this one. Okay, let's do that. We're going to take a 5-minute break. Let's reconvene the meeting, and I think before we went to break, I believe there was a motion made, but that motion did not get a second, so that dies for lack of a second. There is 1.6, the language that the legal counsel had come up with was that we keep, and I'm just going to read it, the chair and in his or her absence, the vice chair are authorized to attend meetings of the San Luis Obispo County Planning Commission, meetings of the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors, meetings between district staff and water board personnel, including either regional water quality control staff or state water board staff, on behalf of the district without compensation except reimbursement for use of his or her private vehicle to attend such meetings pursuant to district policy. 10.1b. If the chair is absent, the vice chair or board member may attend these meetings.
I'm not sure.
So,
fine with that.
that is a suggested language. I don't know if this is something either one of you want to take a look at, and let's see if we can get a motion on this item.
I'm ready to make a motion on it if you want.
Okay.
Okay. I move that we adopt the verbiage of on behalf and strike shall attend and replace with on behalf of the sanitation district.
Are you okay with putting this?
Yeah.
Okay.
And with the other language that legal counsel has come up with.
Okay,
on behalf of the district.
So let's say water board staff on behalf of the district, and that the last sentence would say vice chair or board member may attend these meetings.
That is correct.
Okay, I will second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. Roll call.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
And for clarification with regard to the listing of board members, Director Lucy has noted tonight that she is a regular board member, and so we can list her as regular, but when we put Director Guerrero as an alternate, do we still list him as vice chair?
No. I was trying to wait till we got to the end.
Okay.
I guess this meeting's all over the place tonight.
Well, just so, finish the motion.
Well, there's no motion. There's direction. So, bring back the discussion regarding officers at the next agenda, and then we'll fix the letterhead at the same time.
And John, this is a prime example of another area that the bylaws have to be rectified. So we can go through and keep picking at these things. And let me ask you, is Laura Consulting working on the bylaws? Because it was a board direction that she work on the bylaws with staff.
I don't know if she was, but I think the issue now is that I nominated someone as vice chair, the board voted on it, and he is not the primary rep from your agency, but the alternate. And that is, to me, not proper form. So we really need to revisit that item. I think that kind of is really what's at play now. And thank you for clarifying that for us tonight. Okay?
I'm just going to go back and say, you know, I agree with you. It has to be rectified, right?
Right.
But there are also 5 to 10 other things in this document that need to be rectified, too.
Okay. So we'll put that on the agenda, but I think the more pressing item is Mr. Guerrero is vice chair as an alternate. So let's bring that back so we can discuss that and take proper action. All right, let's move on. Item 6B, selection of the design engineering firm for wastewater treatment facility redundancy project and approval of contract. Mr. Clemens.
Staff is once again recommending that the Board of Directors issue a notice of award to Kennedy Jenks Consultants, Inc., and authorize the interim district administrator to execute the attached contract for design of the wastewater treatment facility redundancy project. I'll just fast forward it. On February 17th, the board of directors requested that the agendized item to review and select the design from the wastewater treatment plant's redundancy be rescheduled for March 16th to allow the directors more time to review the proposed agreement. Here we are 2 weeks later. The directors have had an opportunity to review the agenda, so we're bringing it back. Mike Nunley is here once again to help answer any questions that the board may have. I think that, as I recall, the major issues had been, first of all, I believe the board was concerned about the district staff's ability to do the tasks that are not included in the contract, and I talked with our engineer, and we're confident that we can do all the things that are not included in the contract with Kennedy Jenks. I think the timeline was an issue, and as you look at the timeline now, the major part of the engineering that's scheduled early is geological and surveys. We don't anticipate, again, as was stated earlier, we anticipate hearing back and having some communication with the Coastal Commission by sometime in June, and we will not start any serious design until after that time, till we know where we are with the Coastal Commission. So I think the timeline addresses that. Again, I'm making the board aware that we have talked with the engineer, and we are totally comfortable that we can perform all the tasks that, again, that are not included in the Kennedy Jinks portion of the contract. I'd also like to add that the Kennedy Jinks contract is for $1.8 million, but a portion of that is for construction management, and that's after the engineering phase. So it's actually about 1.4, 1.5 for the actual design portion of the contract. With that, unless Mr. Nunley has anything to add, I'll just give it back to the board.
Mr. Long, do you have anything to add? Okay. Jim, you have any questions of staff?
I don't think I have any questions, but I do have comment.
Okay, Mary, any questions?
No, I'd like to hear Jim's comments.
Okay. Do you want to, let me ask some questions. Because I want to go back to this whole thing with the environmental, the permitting, and Coastal Commission, because I'm looking at page 19.
Those would be the substance of my comments.
So I didn't bring it up.
Okay. Well, you know, I do want to know specifically, I think I'd ask the question if Mr. Rickenbacker or anyone had conversations with Coastal Commission staff ahead of time and what the substance of those comments were. And so we really need to have that. And now when I read on page 19 where it talks about these 2015, where the sea level rise policy guidelines and the interesting approach that's been taken, but then it says, and I'm going to read, the 2015 guidelines call for analysis of project alternatives that minimize risk of coastal hazard and impacts on coastal resources due to sea level rise. Application of the guidelines can have significant project impacts. For example, in nearby Morro Bay, application of these guidelines ended up driving a relocation of the wastewater treatment plant. So I don't know, was that a question asked? Has there been any discussion with coastal staff to see if we are in a similar situation? And I know the project hasn't changed, but in my mind, I'm just wondering, was that conversation had?
With the Coastal Commission staff?
Yeah.
I can't answer that one.
Mike Nunn with MKN. I can speak to correspondence that was relayed to me that Mr. Rickenbacker had with Coastal. He did call them, describe the project, say 6 or 8 weeks ago, talked briefly with Dana Robinson, and explained the nature of this project. I can tell you a little bit about what I'm involved on the Morro Bay project. We're the program managers for that effort. So I can give you some background on what the differences are from my perspective.
That'd be great.
So the Morro Bay project was originally in around the 2008 to 2012 timeline, was going to be a complete replacement of the existing facility. The facilities dated back to the late 50s. There had never been major upgrades or overhauls other than one upgrade in the mid-80s. And they knew at that point that they needed to replace major pieces of infrastructure. They also were not meeting their permit. They had a waiver from secondary treatment requirements. And so the big drivers were the condition and age of the facilities, and also the fact that they had to meet secondary treatment requirements, and they could not with that existing facility. Their biggest problem was wet weather flows. During low flows, they can provide enough treatment for secondary treatment. During higher flows, they have what's called blended primary and secondary, where some flows bypass their trickling filters. So they were in a much different position than you all were. Also, the visibility of that plant, its location adjacent or close to the beaches, and the fact, you know, again, it had to be completely overhauled. They really had to start from scratch. What happened with Coastal Commission was, in terms of flooding, the position of that facility, actually, anything they tried to do to floodproof the existing plant, which was the original plan, they looked at placing flood walls and all sorts of things, caused flooding upstream. So anything they did there had a significant impact on the upstream flooding. So that was one issue they faced. And so in the case of the Sanitary District's redundancy project, what you're looking at is you're looking at placing new structures within the footprint of the existing plant. The final moratorium project prior to Coastal Commission denying their permit was actually to relocate the whole facility adjacent to the existing plants. They could keep the existing plant in service. And that was really one of the challenges, was Coastal viewed that as an inappropriate land use. And if they were going to make all that effort, that you know, they wanted them to look at different locations. Now, that's an engineer paraphrasing. So, but that's essentially the difference. The redundancy project is, you know, construction dollars is a $13 or $14 million project to add redundancy to an existing facility. In general, the existing facility is in relatively good shape. You meet your permit limits. You don't have the same drivers. You don't face a lot of the same drivers that Moore Bay did, and the need for a complete overhaul of the facility. So I can speak to that comparison.
So does the schedule or timeline and the work scope that you've laid out allow for us to have conversations, more frank conversations with Coastal staff up front before we expend?
Yes, sir. And so when you submit your CDP application, Coastal Commission gives you a response within 30 days. So now that the complete applications have been submitted, we should have a response from Coastal, at least an initial response within 30 days. So they received the packet, I believe. The hard copies came to their office on Tuesday. So I believe the clock would start ticking then. So in around middle of April, we should have feedback from them. One of the suggestions that I think Chairman Scholes, you had brought up at a previous meeting was for yourself to possibly contact Coastal Commission staff. I think that would be a great idea. We know the planner who's leading the effort, and I think that would be I would recommend that.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Don't go far enough, anyone else. So John, I think Ms. Tackert or someone had brought up the short-term emergency backup plan being worked on by Mr. Gehring. Can you provide more information on that and how that might relate to moving forward with this project or not?
Yes, that would be merely a patch. What it is, again, the trickling filter is, if you've seen our videos, it's a drop of water or a bunch of what we call media, honeycombs, if you will, and there's a bunch of bugs on there. And so what we've fabricated to try to mitigate any problems if we fail is we're going to run an alternate pipe up there where we would pump from our control box, and we would run it up top, and we would have soft pipe laid out, and so then we'd be able to continue the stream of water over the media. Of course, it wouldn't approach anything like an operating trickling filter where the water is rotating. These pipes would be in place. Again, I wouldn't expect it to meet the same level of treatment as a regular, but it would certainly put us back in the ballpark of being of possibly making our limits. I honestly don't expect it to be something that we could carry on long term, but it would give us possibly a week of, again, it's not how it was designed to operate, and so that's the key to understand that we're putting something in place that's a patchwork, that it's not by design. It's not the way the system's supposed to work, but we expect it to. It would be an effort at mitigation, and I think it would mitigate some of the problems we would have. So, it's not a solid place. It wouldn't serve as a replacement. it would serve as a patch and give us bias time.
Yeah.
Is the idea.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Okay. I'd like to comment that the point of the redundancy is that our license requirements are being tightened than in our discharge limits are being reduced, and the trickling filter, whether it's operating perfectly or not, is arguably incapable of meeting the new license requirements, whether you have a spare spray system or not, and that's the major reason for the redundancy project. Not that we can get some cobbled together method of continuing to spray the trickling filter, although I concur with Mr. Clements that, of course, keeping that equipment operating as best it can if they're in the event of failure is certainly desirable.
Can I add, in Kennedy Jenks, in 2005, the State Water Board, or in 2000, the State Water Board came across, and they actually decided that it's not appropriate for any plant to have a main treatment system and not have a backup system. So whether we could repair our trickling filter or not is still not redundancy as the Water Board would like to see it. And I know some argue that the Water Board can't demand it, but we don't want to be arguing with them. And so redundancy is the best policy. It gives us the best opportunity to keep our beaches safe. And it's a requirement. So, again, being able to repair the trickling filter or not is really not the point here. It's to be able to provide backup in an event of failure, and that's what the State Water Board wants to see, and that's what we're trying to accomplish here.
If I could jump in, too, another item there is the short-term measures that John is looking at with Gary and Taylor. That also doesn't address the fact you've only got one secondary clarifier. So it's really just for the fixed film reactor. Part of the redundancy project is to build a second secondary clarifier. Clarifiers do fail. You can have damage in a clarifier. The scraper mechanisms can fail. You can have things that are catastrophic, not that frequent. In one of the meetings we had with the Regional Water Quality Control Board, the staff assigned to our permitting had mentioned that she has kept the redundancy project on the fact sheet for a couple of cycles now and has not made it a requirement because she knows you're implementing it. But that is a veiled way of saying it could become a requirement if you don't implement it.
Great. Thank you. Sir. Okay, let me open this up to the public. Is there any? Yes. Mayor?
Tell me, I'm not very familiar with the Morro Bays plant. Do they have any history of flooding? Are they in a flood zone?
Yes, they are.
Okay, have they flooded before?
They have flooded before.
Okay, so it is a good comparison.
Well, many treatment plants are located in the floodplain. The Pismo Beach wastewater treatment plant was just upgraded 2006, somewhere in that neighborhood, 2003 to 2006. It's in the floodplain. The Carmel, I don't recall the name of the agency, but the Carmel wastewater plant was recently upgraded. It's in the floodplain. Many wastewater treatment plants are located in the floodplain.
Okay.
Because that's the lowest spot in town.
Okay. And then, I understand. Also, too, in the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Board, did they fine them for those floods, for those spills? Because if you're going to have a flood, you're going to have a spill.
I don't know if they were fined for those.
So,
because it was several years ago. It was before I really got involved on the project, so I couldn't speak to that.
Okay, because in this plan, it clearly states that we were fined $1.1 million.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. All right. And then, John, I have one question for you. Maybe you could tell us the urgency. I mean, we are talking about $20 million of taxpayers' money. And the Coastal Commission has just received the packet, and most people can speak how swiftly they move. And so can you maybe talk a little bit about the urgency here on pushing to approve this contract?
Pushing doesn't seem like the appropriate word.
So, John, just explain the need. I think Jim has mentioned it, so if you'll just repeat it so everyone who's watching at home will understand.
Okay, this thing was originally planned in 2005. We've, on our 2009 permit, we put in the fact sheet that we would perform this project because we knew at that time the Water Board wanted us to have redundancy. We have not met that promise to the Water Board, and right now they're considering a new permit for us. In that new permit, in the early stages of conversation with staff, there was a conversation that said that they would reduce our standards to a level that basically they gave a number, but that number would be something that you can't consistently meet with a typical trickling filter plant. And so the Water Board is very interested in us meeting this. In the interim, since we began the project and we began it in earnest, the Water Board has said that they may not restrict us, they may give us more time. But the issue is that number, okay, let me get away from Let me stop with the Water Board stuff. What happens right now is we have a 30-year-old trickling filter. We have a piece of equipment that was scheduled to live 25 years. It is 30 years old. When that piece of equipment fails, we will deliver untreated waste to the ocean starting 2 hours from that point. And therefore, we need to replace that piece of equipment or have a backup for that piece of equipment, or we've been totally irresponsible. Now, getting back to the Regional Water Board portion of it is that they realize the need for redundancy. They've seen a lot of things, and they've asked us, or we've actually promised to them that we would do this 7 years ago. And so it is urgent that we get this, and we'd like to have this performed by the end of this permitting period, which we get permitted for a period of 5 years. So if we can get this started over the next couple of years, we may get it accomplished within this permitting period. And so it's a matter of just being responsible. Another part of it is meeting the requirements or the requests of the Water Board. And all of that is very important because this whole idea started over 10 years ago, and we promised 7 years ago that we would do it, and we didn't get it done. So we feel we need to get it done now.
Thank you, John.
Thank you,
Mr. Nunley. Sir, let me open this up to the public.
Julie Tacker, and your best case scenario puts you in operation with a redundancy plan in November or December, I can't tell by those little tiny letters, of 2019. So if it breaks tomorrow, all of this discussion is moot. It's broken. So you have to have the backup plan to operate as you have been for the last 30 years. You may never get a coastal development permit from the Coastal Commission, and it is not uncommon to have the Water Board and the Coastal Commission, two heavy-hitting regulatory agencies, butting heads. It's quite common. And the master in this case will be the Coastal Commission. This is their jurisdiction. And the regional board takes a back seat. I've seen it many times. Morro Bay is one place they're taking a back seat. There's nothing the regional board can do to Morro Bay as long as the Coastal Commission isn't satisfied. That's the reality, folks. What I think you've submitted as far as a coastal development permit, I think it's going to slow you down. I think it's wholly inadequate, and I think it's going to raise more questions than it's going to solve any problems. And if I'm wrong, serve up the crow. I will eat it, but I don't think so. And one of the things, because I read this the original application before the exhibits were submitted, and I learned about the exhibits being antique exhibits later. And when I saw the coastal development permit application, I thought, has Mr. Rickenbach ever been to 1600 Aloha Place? And the answer was no. At that time, there was no record of him having been to the plant. And that has me concerned. And it sets the tone for all the other stuff that's wrong with the application. I would like to see you wait for Kennedy Jenks, because they're not going to work until, they shouldn't go to work until you have some feedback from the Coastal Commission. Whether it's feedback or an actual permit in hand, issuance takes time. But if you get approval in front of the commission, then head down this very expensive road. But if you don't, you don't want to have blown the money, which Morro Bay has blown through a lot of ratepayer money. So I don't see an urgency in this particular contract. It can wait whatever it is, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years, if that's how long it takes to get the permit. We don't have to engage Kennedy Jenks. Maybe ESA to support the permit, which is a portion of this contract. You might need somebody better than Rickenbach to get your permit. But I think you still have to go back to, yeah, that's your fundamental object, is to have the clean water. But what are the goals of the NCMA right now? And how much money are you going to spend pursuing this that may just be a brick wall and you may be stopped completely?
Is there anyone else?
Last meeting, questions were asked that Mr. Rickenbach could have answered, but he wasn't here. Again, it seems that we have questions that are being asked, and he's not here. It would have been nice if he was here. Just saying that as a resident and taxpayer. But John, a question to you real quick. How far, how many years, months, whatever, are we into this five-year contract? Thank you.
Is anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward. John, do you want to respond to that?
Yeah, when you say contract, you're talking the water board permit. Our permit expired in October of 2014. Right now we're on what's called an administrative extension. In talking to our water board staff, rep, at whatever point they issue the permit, we'll have 5 years from that time. That permit will be valid for 5 years from the time of issuance. And I'm told that we can expect it sometime between now and the end of the year. So.
And John, maybe you or Mr. Nunley. So when I'm looking at this, the timeline, you talk about consultant selection, board approval, that's before us tonight, that if the board took action on this contract, would Mr. Nunley or would Kennedy Jenks be able to move forward, or is there another step in this process? Because I see where it talks about a notice to proceed. So would they be doing any work, or they don't do any work until they're given a notice to proceed?
We had a separate step in there for a notice to proceed, just to give time to get contracts signed and that sort of thing. If you authorize them tonight, they would be under contract. Now, one comment I wanted to bring up is it's true that not much work would take place between now and when you got input from Coastal Commission. But there will likely be questions that come from Coastal that you don't want to pay engineers to answer or design twice. And so one of our thoughts was, with Kennedy Jenks already on board, and they've already brought some support for them, ESA can be as much support for them on the design side with helping them design mitigation measures as they can help on the permitting side. Our thought was having them on new under contract, doing some of the relatively low-dollar stuff that you need to do with that plan anyway. You really need a survey, a good survey of the area that's undisturbed. You really need a good soils report for anything that you might do there. So our opinion was those items are relatively low cost. They're items that you may need to provide to Coastal anyway. Running your engineering and permitting concurrent is done on every project, nearly. And so the schedule that John has worked out with Kennedy Jenks, I think, gives you the most advantage to, and Kennedy Jenks understands, the proposers both understood that they would not be able to start a significant design effort until input's provided from Coastal. If something comes back from Coastal and you realize you need longer than that June time frame, then you can issue them a letter and say, we need to push you back to start task 304 in July or August. So there's no reason you can't do that. But I think there's tremendous value to having them on board now, because the last thing you want to do is pay one engineer to support permitting, whether it's us or whoever, and then pay a different engineer to actually do the design. It just doesn't seem like that's a good use of taxpayer money.
Do you have anything?
I'm concerned, first of all, with the submittal to the Coastal Commission, and the material going back to 2010, which is pre-spill material. The comment was made that there was no mention of Meadow Creek, which was the source of the flooding that caused the spill in 2010, and the information about sea level rise and the concern with that that is on the mind of the Coastal Commission. So what I would fully expect to see is I don't deal with the Coastal Commission or the Water Board in my professional experience, but I do deal with regulatory agencies, and they commonly issue, in my case, it's called a request for additional information, or an RAI, and I'm sure the Coastal Commission and other regulators have similar documents. So if I use that term, RAI, it's a request for additional information that the regulators may ask. And I fully anticipate that the Coastal Commission will be asking a lot of questions about this due to the material that was submitted. And also in my experience, those requests for information take a lot of time back and forth. Takes them a while to come up with the questions. Often you're given a timeline for when you have to have the response. That response may engender more questions. So I'm concerned that I think this document is gonna cost us time. And I'd like to hear staff's comment on that, or Mr. Nunley's comment on that. I'm looking at our timeline here in terms of feedback from the Coastal Commission by June 30th. I'm sure we'll have that, but I don't think it's probably the kind of feedback that we're anticipating with whether this would be a major or a minor issue for them. It would probably have to do with a lot more documentation in terms of the environmental document. So those are my major concerns. Mr. Nunley mentioned another one, which is I fully endorse the idea of getting early site studies and those kinds of things. And the Kennedy Jenks has a partner in their proposal that would be able to provide that and provide more information for the coastal development permit. I can get behind that, but what I don't want to see is any commencement of large-scale design here before we really have a good read that the Coastal Commission is going to approve a permit. So I think at this stage, my gut tells me that this is preliminary, and we're too early to really proceed with that this evening unless I get really a feedback from Mr. Nunley and staff that guarantees that I don't see at this point. And I'm very concerned that Mr. Rickenbach, I understand he's got a bunch of other commitments and so forth, but this project is exceptionally important to our district. I just can't say that any more firmly. This is exceptionally important to our district, and this is quite frankly disappointing to me.
Okay, Mary. Mr. Clemens.
Okay, I wanted to make sure we separate the CDB app from the Kennedy Jenks contract. Those are two different. They're interrelated because the only reason we mention this is because Kennedy Jenks, and I had the conversation with him this week, is prepared to, we talked to him about the board's concern with starting design prior to having a permit. And so that's the only reason they're mentioned here. They're two different items. So if you have a problem with CDP, that's different from the Kennedy Jenks contract. Now, with regard to the timeline of June 30th, we expect a response from the Coastal Commission, which is from 30 days from the time we filed, which was the 11th. So we expect our first response back in April. And at that point, we'll start that period you're talking about, which almost inevitably happens with apparently almost all permitting projects where you have a response and then you have to deal back. So it's not that we're going to first hear back in June. We expect to hear back in April and spend a period between April, May, and perhaps June. So we're talking 2.5 months from the time we hear back from the Coastal Commission if we're talking June 30th. So it's not, again, it's not a situation where June 30th will be the first time we hear from the Coastal Commission. That'll give us, we'll hear from them in 30 days, and June 30th will give us 2.5 months to work through whatever issues they have. So that's why we're optimistic. You know, we're optimistic that when they come back, we'll be able to, you know, we'll address whatever their issues are. What happens is, like you said, this project is critical, and to sit back and you know, run from the boogeyman and be afraid of every little thing that could possibly happen may not be wise either. We have to push forward and see what the Coastal Commission has to say, and when they respond to us in 30 days, then we'll respond in the way that's necessary. In the meantime, our engineers could start some preliminary geotechnical work, some preliminary groundwork and set so that whenever we get through that process with the Coastal Commission, that we could already have the preliminary work done. The other side of it is if it comes out that the Coastal Commission works out for us and we haven't done anything with our engineers, then again, we waste the time.
So thank you, John. Let me reset this. Okay. Stop. Everyone stop. We've got two firms that responded to the request for proposals. They appear to be two qualified firms. The team that reviewed them has decided that Kennedy Jenks is the better fit for this job, correct? So now, that said, you guys are telling us that you have some assurances that, and I agree, I have a little bit of experience in planning and environmental documents. I've written environmental documents. I've dealt with the Coastal Commission in a former lifetime. So, as long as I can, we get to that assurance that basically that we do the surveying, the soils, and any geotechnical and any low level, I think we would be fine with this. Is what my gut tells me. I will say I, too, am disappointed that of the approach that was taken. I understand some of the logic of it, and so I'm willing to go with whomever to Santa Cruz and have a conversation with Coastal staff, because if this had come to me, I would have looked at this and looked at new regulations and figured out, is there a way to modify it or at least add a supplement to it ahead of time, as opposed to just giving them something older and waiting for a response. So I think we need to separate the two out. I don't think there's any harm in moving forward with selecting Kennedy Jenks with the understanding that they're only going to do low level work, and that I would suggest to my colleagues up here that I'm more than happy to go to Santa Cruz with whomever we choose to have a conversation with Coastal staff and shed some light on this and see really what their thoughts are on the process that's been chosen with the environmental. But I would say that, and this is another complexity to this, is we sole sourced the contract to Mr. Rickenbach. I've known John for many years, and now I'm starting to understand that he's a one-man shop, and looks like he's really busy. I saw that he's on a few other projects, so we at some point we probably need to revisit that. But I think tonight we're really talking about Kennedy Jenks with some assurances that they're only going to do low-level work that we would need to do anyway, and then let's give some priority to having conversations with Coastal staff up front, and that there not be any major design work until we get to a comfort level. That's what my gut's telling me, but I'm just one member on this board, so.
I tend to agree with your assessment that I think it would be good for you to talk to the Coastal Commission. I appreciate your willingness to do that. I do support low-level work to continue as was recommended. I think it's imperative that we proceed with that. I want to make sure that, and I also endorse the selection of Kennedy Jenks, that I think they've been well vetted, and that the technical recommendation to engage them for this service is well thought out. The issue again that concerns me is that we don't really start large scale design work until we have information that the Coastal Commission is ready to approve a permit. But as far as the low-level work, I certainly endorse that.
I too am fine with the low-level work, and particularly with Kennedy Jenks, since it appears that they did most of the first time this application went in, I guess it would have been 2005, they were lead engineers on it at that time. But there's just one other thing that I would like added, because I too was, you know, and I'm not used to, you know, creating these documents, but I am used to reading them, and I too was disappointed. But what I was disappointed with was with, of course, some of the content, but it not being complete, leaving out dates, signatures. And so if there's some way somebody can go back through and even maybe submit an addendum to the Coastal Commission saying, we're sorry, we don't know what date it is, or something like that. I don't know. But maybe the application itself can some way be cleaned up, because, you know, even, you know, amounts enclosed are left empty, and, you know, they don't like that stuff. That, you know, it's like a funder, you know, they don't like you to leave anything unturned. More is better than less. So I would support both my other directors' feelings about it. I don't know. This needs to be cleaned up. So you want a motion?
Yeah, someone want to try a motion?
A question would be, can we authorize the staff's recommendation is issue a notice of award to Kennedy Jenks, execute the district's agreement for design services. And again, I'm generally in support of that. Our timeline calls for a notice to proceed early in April, and I wonder if we can issue the notice of award with a limited notice to proceed for the low-level work that we've discussed, subject to a full notice to proceed upon getting information indicating approval by the Coastal Commission of a permit.
Jim, can I ask you a question on that? John, is this the proper time? So if we go into an agreement to start low-level work now, and then upon, you know, approval from the Coastal Commission, is that what you're thinking, that we would go into the $20 million contract to take off with it?
No, this is the design. This is $1.4 million for design and approximately $400,000 for construction oversight.
Okay, so we're looking at $2 million.
Yeah, it's 1.8.
Oh, excuse me. Okay, we got want to do that. Okay, so 1.8. So this is my concern too. Is if we now we've spent 1.8 on a site that we're not going to be able to do this on. Where we could take 1.8 and build up the integrity of the plant while the Coastal Commission's moving through. And I understand the low-level work, and I think that needs to continue on, but I'm reluctant to jump in full force on a site that is very, very, very iffy.
Well, there's no documentation to say the site's iffy. I mean, we got to be careful.
There is documentation, John. It floods. It's a high priority.
Wait, the expert just said that there are other facilities in flood zones because that is a function of design. It is a low spot because these kind of facilities, you know, no, I'm not going to say that because it's recorded. But the stuff, the waste rolls downhill.
A flood does not necessarily put the plant out of operation either. There's the plant operates in potentially can operate under flood conditions. So I don't see that as a stumbling block here necessarily.
I don't see this a high priority.
Well, no, hold on. It's not that we don't see this high priority. They've already made some. There'd be some flood mitigations. I think in the proposal, they acknowledge where it's located. It talks about the confluence of these creeks, and it talks about doing flood risk mitigation study and coming up with ways. I think there's already been, and I was out at the plant with John for more than an hour, and just refreshing my memory from previously, we've already done some flood proofing at that plant, correct?
Yes.
So, you know, my only advice is that we just got to be careful what we say over here, because if we are creating a public record, then that becomes an issue. When if there's no evidence or documentation, we just got to make sure that we're doing whatever it takes to protect the district.
I think if we stay in task one, which is topographical survey, geotechnical condition assessment, flood risk mitigation, if we stay within those, we won't spend a whole lot of money.
Because we're not talking about 1.8 next week. We're talking about easing into this.
Yeah, and if we stay with task one, we won't even reach half, or it'll be a fraction of.
It's a fraction. You're not even going to.
And so
in that case, let me move to approve staff's recommendation to issue a notice of award to Kennedy Jinks Consultant, execute the district's agreement for design services, and issue a notice to proceed with task one of the proposed contract.
Can you include the dollar amount in that, please?
The overall contract is $1.8 million. And to proceed with the scope of work under Task 1 and any further work to be subject to authorization from the board to proceed.
So I'm going to second that because I think John is exactly right. Here we are. It's 5 years later. We're under a directive, and we can't just keep dodging this, and we need to start taking some incremental steps. And like I said, I'm willing to travel with whomever to go up to Santa Cruz if that needs to be this week or next week before our next meeting to really get a sense of what they think of this and how we can supplement and this information to move this process along. Because I think you're right, the project description is still the same, but there have been new guidelines, and we just want to make sure that we're getting it directly from them as opposed to, and what jurisdictions usually do, CEQA says you submit something, you have 30 days to tell you if you've got a complete application or not, and they wait to the 29th day to give you more, and then the clock starts ticking again. So anything we can do to circumvent or shorten that process would be very helpful, I think. Okay, there's a motion, there's a second. Any other discussion? Roll call.
Director Lucy?
Yep.
Director Hill?
Yes.
Chairman Shills?
Yes. All right, miscellaneous items. John, any oral communications?
No, sir.
Any written communications?
There is a tentative ruling on one of the lawsuits that the district is engaged in, and I'm informed that Assemblyman Asajian might be willing to help the district with proceeding in some of those matters, but that's probably an issue I think we're going to take up later in a closed session.
Yeah, that's an issue we will take up in a closed session, and I'm glad to hear that because I've had similar conversations. No other written communications. And I think once we get to announcing what's in closed session, I believe there is copies of that ruling that we would make available. Is that correct? Okay. John, verbal report tonight?
No, sir.
I'm impressed. Nicely done. So basically, City Attorney, looks like we've got quite a few items on closed. City Legal Counsel, we have quite a few items on closed session tonight. Can you just touch on those, and then I'm going to get public comment on those?
Yes, Chairman Schultz. The district will hold three closed sessions tonight, two under the existing litigation provision of the Brown Act to discuss the Sanitation District versus the Special District Risks Management Authority. The second case is the Sanitation District versus the State Water Resources Control Board. The third item is the public employee appointment exception to the Brown Act, titled District Administrator and Conference with Labor Negotiator, Agency Representative Chair Scholes, and concerning the District Administrator. Thank you.
Okay, very good. And you do have John, or you have that information for anyone who's interested. Let me see if there's any members of the public that would like to address any of the items on closed session tonight.
On the employee board district manager, I'm wondering how many applications did we have? I believe you interviewed two, but I'd like to know how many overall applied. Lastly, I read the tentative ruling. It is time to get out of the litigation business. Tonight is your night. Do us a favor. I'm a ratepayer. End it tonight, please.
Anyone else?
I have to apologize because my sign gets uglier and uglier the longer this goes on. I also read the tentative ruling. It's not boding well for us. I think we can all agree it's time to stop the litigation, move forward, and put this behind us. I think it's quite clear we're still suffering from Mr. Wallace's aftershocks. So this is just another example when we're turning in documents that are already 5 years old, something that should have been done long ago. Time to stop.
Anyone else?
Last time tonight, I promise. Okay, so here's what I want you to do. I too have read the tentative ruling, found it on the internet. with the help from a friend. But let Melissa Thorne go. Ms. Thorne was hired by John Wallace. Her contract has never been amended beyond representing you all at the ACL hearings back in September of 2012. So she has continued this work, entered into litigation at the direction of the Ferrara board some months ago. Mayor Hill came to your board, shared with us that he'd had a conversation with a water board member suggesting that settlement offers had been improperly levied or suggested, or I don't know what the proper term is, submitted. Let's let Mr. Trujillo have a crack at it. I believe you do have to stay in litigation to actually settle with the water board, with the state water board, because the regional board doesn't have the authority to settle. But so just between Mr. Trujillo and Ms. Stockton, stay in long enough to submit the proper settlement in the proper format, whatever they will accept, and get out of the litigation business. With regard to a new district administrator, I too was under the impression that I had heard the number 9 applications with 2 interviews. Some confusion I have now tonight is that Mary Lucy is now asserting herself as the primary appointee from Oceano and wasn't in the interviews. So now you're going to hire somebody you've never met. How does that work for Oceano? How does that work for the district? You don't even know these guys' names. So that is a problem. So good luck to you hiring a new administrator. Sorry, Mary doesn't know who they are.
Is there anyone else? Okay, seeing no one come forward, I'm going to close this to the public. And we are now going to go into closed session.
I think I stole it.
John, are these yours? Okay, we're going to come back into open session, and we are going to report out on closed session. And let me make the first announcement. And I wanted to, this is in regards to basically a district administrator. The board unanimously voted to appoint Mr. Gerhard Huebner as district administrator. His contract will be placed on the next agenda, which I believe is April 6, 2016. Correct, John? Okay, very good. Mr. Trujillo.
Thank you, Chairman Scholes. The board held 2 closed sessions under the existing litigation. A report on the first matter, which is the Special District Risk Management Authority. The board received a status report and gave direction to staff. Other than those 2 comments, there's no reportable action. In the second matter, Well, I'm sorry. In regards to the first matter, the board authorized a release of the tentative ruling, which has become final and has been placed. Additional copies were placed out for the public. In the second matter with the State Water Resources Control Board, there's no reportable action, but the board did receive a status report and gave direction to staff. That concludes my report, Mr. Schultz. Thank you.
Thank you. And I think with that, we are adjourned.